We work together this evening in chapter 6 of The Mother. Now Sri Aurobindo has begun to enumerate the four great aspects and personalities of the mother. We read last time about Imperial Maheshwari. Tonight, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi. Mahakali is of another nature, not wideness, but height, not wisdom, but force and strength are her peculiar power. There is in her an overwhelming intensity, a mighty passion of force to achieve, a divine violence rushing to shatter every limit and obstacle. All her divinity leaps out in a splendor of tempestuous action. She is there for swiftness, for the immediately effective process, the rapid and direct stroke, the frontal assault that carries everything before it. Terrible is her face to the Asura, dangerous and ruthless her mood against the haters of the divine. For she is the warrior of the worlds who never shrinks from the battle. Intolerant of imperfection, she deals roughly with all in man that is unwilling, and she is severe to all that is obstinately ignorant and obscure. Her wrath is immediate and dire against treachery and falsehood and malignity. Ill will is smitten at once by her scourge. Indifference, negligence, and sloth in the divine work she cannot bear. And she smites awake at once with sharp pain if need be, the untimely slumberer and the loiterer. The impulses that are swift and straight and frank, the movements that are unreserved and absolute, the aspiration that mounts in flame, are the motion of Mahakali. Her spirit is tameless. Her vision and will are high and far-reaching like the flight of an eagle. Her feet are rapid on the upward way, and her hands are outstretched to strike and to succor. For she, too, is the mother, and her love is as intense as her wrath. And she has a deep and passionate kindness. When she is allowed to intervene in her strength, then in one moment are broken like things without consistence, the obstacles that immobilize or the enemies that assail the seeker. If her anger is dreadful to the hostile and the vehemence of her pressure painful to the weak and timid, she is loved and worshipped by the great, the strong, and the noble. For they feel that her blows beat what is rebellious in their material into strength and perfect truth. Hammer straight what is wry and perverse, and expel what is impure or defective. But for her, what is done in a day might have taken centuries. Without her, Ananda might be wide and grave or soft and sweet and beautiful, but would lose the flaming joy of its most absolute intensities. To knowledge, she gives a conquering might, brings to beauty and harmony a high and mounting movement, and imparts to the slow and difficult labor after perfection an impetus that multiplies the power and shortens the long way. Nothing can satisfy her that falls short of the supreme ecstasies, the highest heights, the noblest aims, the largest vistas. Therefore, with her is the victorious force of the divine, and it is by grace of her fire and passion and speed, if the great achievement can be done now rather than hereafter. Wisdom and force are not the only manifestations of the Supreme Mother. There is a subtler mystery of her nature, and without it, wisdom and force would be incomplete things, and without it, perfection would not be perfect. Above them is the miracle of eternal beauty, an unseizable secret of divine harmonies, the compelling magic of an irresistible universal charm and attraction that draws and holds things and forces and beings together, and obliges them to meet and unite, that a hidden ananda may play from behind the veil and make of them its rhythms and its figures. This is the power of Mahalakshmi, and there is no aspect of the divine Shakti more attractive to the heart of embodied beings. Maheshwari can appear too calm and great and distant for the littleness of earthly nature to approach or contain her. Mahakali, too swift and formidable for its weakness to bear. But all turn with joy and longing to Mahalakshmi, for she throws the spell of the intoxicating sweetness of the divine. To be close to her is a profound happiness, and to feel her within the heart is to make existence a rapture and a marvel. Grace and charm and tenderness flow out from her like light from the sun. And wherever she fixes her wonderful gaze or lets fall the loveliness of her smile, the soul is seized and made captive and plunged into the depths of an unfathomable bliss. Magnetic is the touch of her hands, and their occult and delicate influence refines mind and life and body, and where she presses her feet, course miraculous streams of an entrancing ananda. And yet it is not easy to meet the demand of this enchanting power or to keep her presence. Harmony and beauty of the mind and soul, harmony and beauty of the thoughts and feelings, harmony and beauty in every outward act and movement, harmony and beauty of the life and surroundings, this is the demand of Mahalakshmi. Where there is affinity to the rhythms of the secret world bliss and response to the call of the all-beautiful, and concord and unity and the glad flow of many lives turned towards the divine, in that atmosphere she consents to abide. But all that is ugly and mean and base, all that is poor and sordid and squalid, all that is brutal and coarse repels her advent. Where love and beauty are not, or are reluctant to be born, she does not come. Where they are mixed and disfigured with baser things, she turns soon to depart, or cares little to pour her riches. If she finds herself in men's hearts, surrounded with selfishness and hatred and jealousy and malignance and envy and strife, if treachery and greed and ingratitude are mixed in the sacred chalice, if grossness of passion and unrefined desire degrade devotion, in such hearts, the gracious and beautiful goddess will not linger. A divine disgust seizes upon her, and she withdraws, for she is not one who insists or strives. Or, veiling her face, she waits for this bitter and poisonous devil's stuff to be rejected and disappear before she will find anew her happy influence. Ascetic bareness and harshness are not pleasing to her, nor the suppression of the heart's deeper emotions and the rigid repression of the soul's and the life's parts of beauty. For it is through love and beauty that she lays on men the yoke of the divine. Life is turned in her supreme creations into a rich work of celestial art, and all existence into a poem of sacred delight. The world's riches are brought together and concerted for a supreme order, and even the simplest and commonest things are made wonderful by her intuition of unity and the breath of her spirit. Admitted to the heart, she lifts wisdom to pinnacles of wonder and reveals to it the mystic secrets of the ecstasy that surpasses all knowledge, meets devotion with the passionate attraction of the divine, teaches to strength and force the rhythm that keeps the might of their acts harmonious and in measure, and casts on perfection the charm that makes it endure forever. So we look a little more at these goddess powers, Mahakali and Mahalakshmi. Mahakali, in the mythology of India, makes her appearance first in the Devi Mahatmya, a devotional text that you've become familiar with by now. This is around 500 CE, and she appears on the battlefield to crush darkness, to crush ignorance, to crush arrogance, and in fact has signal adventures which arrest the advance of Raktabija from being victorious for the forces of the Asuras. I think the mythologies are there for you to read. We need not cover the stories of how she defeats these demons in great detail. But Sri Aurobindo conveys here something that's quite different from what we normally read when we read of Mahakali in mythology or of Kali in mythology. She is of a different sort than what Sri Aurobindo presents here. All of these great goddess powers, Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, and later when we read Mahasaraswati, come out of a realm of superconscience and find expression in powers extending down to the earth. They are not limited simply to that placement on that ridge looking into the secrets of the supermind. Rather, they are conversant with all things here, so they are active in the cosmos. But Mahakali is also wide. That is why she is Maha, she's great. Mahakali typically acts as a power in the higher vital. Sri Aurobindo notes that that is her placement in the cosmic enginery. But when you see her, where she originates in the realm of the overmind, you find that she is not black, but she is golden in color. Typically, the mythological figure of Kali is black. She's thin, she has a lolling tongue, her eyes are red. She wears a garland of human skulls and she is anything but the figure of loveliness. But mythology is one thing, and spiritual experience another. However we may meet the destructive form in the vital, in the physical, of the energy of Kali, when we meet the power of Mahakali, it lifts us up. Sri Aurobindo, in noting progress in his own sadhana, spoke often about moments where he could get the confluence of Mahakali's energy to consign itself to the perfection that Mahasaraswati demanded, and then could be fixed, a siddhi in the physical being that otherwise he could not secure. So it is that intensity, that absoluteness of force that Mahakali brings, that especially when it works in concert with other powers of the divine, that delivers the perfection that is the aim of the sadhana. Sri Aurobindo is writing here about these goddess powers who want not simply to lean their influence into earth, but want to fix themselves, to station themselves on this material foundation, because it is part of the cosmic order that they wish to sustain, to make a transition from this diurnal rotation almost between light and dark, light and dark. They're always having to put down the asuras into a region of existence upon this globe where light wins. Satyam eva jayate is the old expression. Truth verily conquers. That is their aim. Truth, power, beauty, perfection and work all want to fix themselves here at the physical level. So what Mahakali does is the addition of perfection at this moment. What does she require from us? Receptivity. Mother noted that when she exhibited these powers in her own being, and they were often in seasonal rotation, that the one that found the smallest audience was the power of Mahakali. Because people would pray for its intervention, to get rid of some ignorance in them, to abolish egoism, to extirpate desire, to insist on perfection here and now. But then, when they began to see that here comes that power from Mahakali, and they could see it approaching, they grew fearful. They shrank. And instead of asking for the grace of that, they prayed for its removal. Please, not today. Mañana, mañana. Tomorrow, tomorrow. So she would have to suspend and bring it back. But there were times when people could see that she, the mother, had brought Mahakali fully into the room. And when her eyes would flash and she would turn and she would say to people who had been resistant a moment before, "This shall be done," they deferred and they did. She could insist, but she had to wait for the auspicious moment, because otherwise everything gets shattered. As Kali is pictured as being dark. What she does is represent to us something more than a mere mythological figure, because she represents the realism of the cosmos as well. That this world has a clock ticking, and you have so much energy, and you have so much time, and what is it that you want to do with it? Because she is relentless. She insists that if your sincerity wants to push towards the completion of your goal, that you work on it here and now, that you not postpone it. She is described in the Nirvana Tantra as so vast, so great, as she represents the great goddess power itself, that Brahma and Shiva and Vishnu rise from her like bubbles on the sea. They are formations of her being. And like bubbles, they pop and go. From one universe to another, there is always a Brahma arising and going away. Innumerable, uncountable are the universes in which this great goddess presents herself, casts all this into being. That same tantra describes that these three, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, are like the water gathered in a cow's hoofprint. So limited are they by comparison with what she is. But she is not simply this awful reality, this awesome being, but she takes a favorable form even in the tantra. In the Yogini Tantra, she is seen as the greatest of the vidyas, of the paths of knowledge. She is the swarupa, the self-formed being of the Mahadevi, of the great goddess. And she is beautiful. The Karpuradi Stotra describes her as being both young and beautiful. So in hymns, but also in practice, she is recognized as an all-transcending reality that moves through time, and you'd better be quick in your pace so that she doesn't swallow you up. But she is still the mother. She is still the goddess who cares for all. So, in mythology, she is described in a way that appeals to the heart of the devotee. And in the tantra, she's described in a way that appeals to the practice of the sadhak and of the sadhika. Because she is there to take you across the experience of the dualities to the transcendence beyond. She acts in tantric practice when the sadhak is eager, and she acts when one does not misunderstand her severity, when one is willing to take the blow as a blessing. This is so interesting because, as the Tantra describes this, so was our mother in the Sri Aurobindo ashram. Those few who could let her work in them relentlessly and vigorously grew the most. Those few who were fearless in their nature could accept what she could bring to them. So beautiful, powerful, she brings Ananda also. But typically, we think of Ananda in relationship with Mahalakshmi. Of course, we meet what we come to know as Lakshmi first as Sri, the goddess Sri. And appended to the Veda is the Sri Sukta. And there is a great description of who she is. And just as Mahakali wants to carry you to mukti and to siddhi, beyond the dualities, to the experience of what is true nature, Satchit Ananda, Lakshmi does the same, but appealing to the heart. Where Mahakali typically works in the higher vital, Mahalakshmi typically works through the emotional center, reaching to the heart behind the heart, into the soul, using the emotions, using the grace of melody, the grace of movement, to bring forward the rhythms of the psychic being. So as these come forward, we see what is the power of this grace. It is a power that delivers. It brings a perfection, a charm that are absent in sheer force. Force absent, Mahalakshmi is incomplete. Without force, the simple experience of beauty does not reach realization. These goddess powers have to work in concert with each other. And where do they work in concert? But in the laboratory of the human being, reaching all the way into the physical. So Sri Aurobindo, writing here about how things have to fall into harmonic order in thought and in feeling and in bodily action, is something that you can trace back to his own being. If you look to see how he comported his thought, there was no ugliness. There was no smallness. He could be tender, he could write lyrically, he could write epically. But all that he wrote were expressions of the vast ocean that was his mind, clear, luminous, felicitous. So too, his feelings towards all. He had an unexpressible love for all who were part of his ashram, but for the world entire. He wasn't undertaking an integral yoga because he needed the solution for himself personally. How is it that one brings perfection to the body? But rather as an element in a world progress, that the world manifesting the power of the soul and the advent of a truth could reach a new possibility to the cosmos writ large. So you see that in every level he was expressing what is this command of Mahalakshmi: to beatify, to beautify. These were part and parcel of the yoga that he practiced. You remember that Amal Kiran, Katie Sethna, used to go and take a nap in Mother's salon with her permission so that he could get some rest. And he could sit there, and at some times in the afternoon, he would see a shadow come into the field of vision, and he could realize from its statuesque appearance that it was Sri Aurobindo, who had gone to move next to the window to look out towards the Bay of Bengal. And even in his private moments, even when he was unguarded, he didn't slouch, he didn't lurch this way or that, but he stood nobly, like a king, like a great being, without anyone seeing him. It was his natural posture. And so this is what Lakshmi invites us to do, starting with the body, to move and be graceful, with the heart, to have uplifted feelings, to feel oneness wherever you cast your gaze, in your thought, to see truth deeply, but to see it in the wide context as well. So there's something that was intimate to his practice. And of course, when we think of Lakshmi, when we see the mythological images of her, she was always seated on the lotus. She is identified with a lotus. With a lotus pad, you see her standing. The lotus pad, of course, sits atop the waters of creation, rising from the murky deeps. But what sits on it is faultless, is perfect, is pure, has spiritual force, is divine. So on Sri Lakshmi's lotus pad, you see all manner of spiritual beings populated. Buddha sits on the lotus pad. Many, many other divinities, realized beings, are pictured in that way. You see her being showered by an elephant to the left, an elephant to the right. And the elephant, of course, represents the clouds of heaven filled with the felicity of rain, the sap of existence, and they shower her constantly with that. So these symbols are very deep and appealing to the Indian. When they see this, they know instantly what it means, because it conveys something of the inner experience, the very iconography associated with Lakshmi can install that charm in one's being. So, to pass an hour in contemplation regarding great works of art that speak to this in painting, in stone, in poetry, in mantra. These capture the rhythms of this great goddess and install her in your life. So, two, you wish to be spiritual beings. It isn't necessary for you to renounce the world in order to attain a spiritual consciousness. As he says here, bareness, denial is not her nature. But, of course, gluttony and attachment to forms is not her wish either. So, one should go back to that chapter 4 where Sri Aurobindo described how we live in relation to prosperity as a guide. If she gives, then you hold it for her. You experience this for her. And if she takes, then you release it happily. Capable of living a simple, gracious, noble life, whether there is affluence around you or apparent poverty. It is the wealth of the heart that really speaks to the presence or the absence of Mahalakshmi, this great beauty. We may have opportunity to come back and speak about her in terms of tantras that are written in search of her truth on another evening. But for now, I think we will turn to Savitri. Book 2, The Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Canto 11, The Kingdoms and Godheads of the Greater Mind. And let's see if these great beings in the greater mind can access and hold the goddess power. The unseen grew visible to student eyes. Explained was the immense inconscient scheme. Audacious lines were traced upon the void. The infinite was reduced to square and cube. Arranging symbol and significance, tracing the curve of a transcendent power, they framed the Kabbalah of the cosmic law, the balancing line discovered of life's technique, and structured her magic and her mystery. Imposing schemes of knowledge on the vast, they clamped to syllogisms of finite thought, the free logic of an infinite consciousness, grammared the hidden rhythms of nature's dance, critiqued the plot of the drama of the worlds, made figure and number a key to all that is. The psychoanalysis of cosmic self was traced, its secrets hunted down, and read the unknown pathology of the unique. Assessed was the system of the probable, the hazard of fleeing possibilities, to account for the actual's unaccountable sum, necessity's logarithmic tables drawn, cast into a scheme, the triple act of the One. Unveiled, the abrupt, invisible multitude of forces, whirling from the hands of chance, seemed to obey some vast imperative. Their tangled motives worked out unity. A wisdom read, their mind to themselves unknown, their anarchy rammed into a formula, and from their giant randomness of force, following the habit of their million paths, distinguishing each faintest line and stroke of a concealed, unalterable design, out of the chaos of the invisible's moods, derived the calculus of destiny. In its bright pride of universal lore, mind's knowledge overtopped the omniscient's power. The eternal's winging eagle puissances, surprised in their untracked empyrean, stooped from their gyres to obey the beck of thought. Each mystery god, forced to revealing form, assigned his settled moves in nature's game. zigzagged at the gesture of a chess player will across the checkerboard of cosmic fate. In the wide sequence of necessity's steps, predicted every act and thought of God, its values weighed by the accountant mind, checked in his mathematized omnipotence, lost its divine aspect of miracle, and was a figure in a cosmic sum. The mighty mother's whims and lightning moons, arisen from her all-wise, unruled delight in the freedom of her sweet and passionate breast, robbed of their wonder, were chained to a cause and aim. An idol of bronze replaced her mystic shape that captures the movements of the cosmic vasts. In the sketch precise of an ideal face, forgotten was her eyelash's dream print, carrying on their curve infinity's dreams, lost the alluring marvel of her eyes. The surging wave throbs of her vast sea heart, they bound to a theorem of ordered beats. Her deep designs, which from herself she had veiled, bowed self-revealed in their confessional. For the birth and death of the worlds, they fixed a date. The diameter of infinity was drawn, measured the distant arc of the unseen heights, and visualized the plumbless, viewless depths, till all seemed known that in all time could be. All was coerced by number, name, and form. Nothing was left untold, incalculable. Yet was their wisdom circled with a naught. Truths they could find and hold, but not the one truth. The highest was to them unknowable. By knowing too much, they missed the whole to be known. The fathomless heart of the world was left unguessed, and the transcendent kept its secrecy. Search not with the mind, find with the mystic heart. Namaste. Jai Ma.